This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hello there, how are you? It's Kevin Riley here and welcome to Irish Time here on the Manawatu People's Radio Station, the best community station in the town and in the neighbourhood, in fact. So I'm just going to be reading a wee bit of news as it happens. The stuff just came off, you know, got this yesterday. So that is pretty up to date. Anyway, this is about Red Bus workers. These are people that constructed all these buses that were going to sort of save Ballymena. You know, because they sort of, you know, Boris Johnson was the mayor and he sort of loved them, apparently. Anyway, about 1,200 Red Bus workers have been made redundant after the company entered administration. Just 50 jobs will be retained at the firm, the last UK-owned bus manufacturer administrator said. Last bus? The company has suffered cash flow problems and had sought investment or a new owner. It's a bit like, you know, Thomas Cook. Talks with two potential buyers for the firm, best known for building the new Routemaster, known as the Boris Box, failed to reach a conclusion last week. Deland, I think that's how you pronounce it, the firm's administrator, said the lack of a buyer for Routebus had caused the redundancies. The Route family, who founded Routebus in 1946, said global changes from diesel to electric and bus technology had caused a sharp decline in demand for buses in the UK. In a statement, the family said that it had moved work from its facility in Malaysia to Ballymena in a bid to secure local jobs. These factors have resulted in significant losses at Routebus, which our family have been covering for over a year. But the statement also added it simply became impossible to sustain that level of support. At a press conference on Wednesday afternoon, union officials called for the immediate intervention of the British government. They said they sought meetings with Prime Minister Johnson and New Zealand Secretary Julian Smith, who said they must stand up for British industry. Jackie Pollock, Unite's Regional Secretary, that's the union, added the government must intervene to save jobs and skills. The administrator will need to find someone of calibre and of real standing who has with the know-how and the skill to take the company on. It used to be for Ballymena. It used to be a bustling market town, but the years have not been kind to Ballymena. This is Willie John McBride, all you rugby heads out there. That's where he came from. The potential loss of so many jobs would be a blow to any town in Northern Ireland, but this isn't the time for the first time Ballymena had been hit. The closure of big employers like JTI and Michelin, the tyre company, in recent years have already left scars on the town. So it's pretty chronic. For the last 5 years, management have told us that they can't give us a wage rise as they were investing in the company. Who's going to pay an employee, a 62-year-old man? I have nothing now. That's it. That's a good point. You know, the older you get, the chance of getting employment is very much reduced because they don't take on older workers in a lot of countries, mostly because they've got more experience and they expect a decent wage. I'm off shift and due back tomorrow night, but I've been in since 8 o'clock this morning hoping to find out if I've got a job. Latest accounts show that the Routebus Group lost £1.7 million on a turnover of £227 million in 2017. But its financial situation has deteriorated since then. It made two rounds of redundancies last year, with 95 jobs going in February and June, which said reflected the continued low levels of demand for new buses in the UK market. UK has traditionally been Redbus's biggest market, but has been contracting for over 2 years. In other words, it was going backwards. Figures from the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders show that in the second quarter of this year, new bus and coach registrations are down 30% compared to the same time last year. That marks the tenth quarter in a row that the new regulations have declined. So that's really sad news, because that's a huge amount of people Because Ballymena is a very, it's like Dannyburg, it's a small town, okay? And obviously that, and the people around there, you know, who live around Ballymena would be sort of affected by it all.
Whatever it costs, I will pay. So be easy and free when you're drinking on me. I'm a man you don't meet every day. Took out my duck and him I did shoot up down in the county Kildare. So be easy and free when you're drinking with me. I'm a man you don't meet every day. So come fill up your glasses of brandy and wine.
Queen's, this is by Queen's University in Belfast. It's a top in New Zealand's top university in the you know the London Times sort of survey. Queen's University remains the best university in Northern Ireland according to an influential list. It has climbed three places to stay within the top 40 in the Times and Sunday Good University Guide. Ulster University has also climbed in the national rankings to join 58. The guide, which contains the full UK rankings, will be published this weekend in the Sunday Times and aims to provide the definitive rankings of UK universities and the most comprehensive overview of higher education in the UK. Last year, Queen's was placed joint 38th and has now jumped three places to 35, while Ulster has risen two places from 60th. That's the Ulster University, by the way. The University of Ulster, yep. The guide cites Queen's University of Belfast increased spending on facilities and services, including an investment of £350 million into capital projects as one factor in its improved performance. Earlier this year, the university stopped its £3 million School of Biological Sciences, as well as establishing its Precision Medicine Centre of Excellence, which hopes to develop artificial intelligence solutions to enable early, rapid and precise diagnosis of cancer. You know, good on them. The guide adds that such developments sit alongside a commitment to diversity in the student population, with 30% of undergraduates receiving support from a £3.8 million pool of funds for widening participation, whatever that means. Describing Queen's as Northern Ireland's premier university, the guide also points out that it has dropped out of the top 100 nationally for satisfaction with teaching quality. The institution, however, ranks first in the UK for knowledge transfer partnerships, and is the top is in the top 30 UK universities for 2019 for its completion rate at nearly 90% proportion of top class degrees awarded, and for graduate job prospects 82%. Oh, good. Its student experience was rated at 77.5%, nearly 3% below that of Ulster University, with the guy describing the latter institution as scoring significantly higher than Queen's for both measurements of student satisfaction and the quality of teaching. Both areas, Ulster ranks in the top, in the Ulster top 50. In the UK top 50, I should say. Meanwhile, the guide praises Ulster University's extensive outreach programs and financial aid packages, as well as investing heavily in its campus facilities for students. It's highlighting its ongoing £250 million development at its Belfast campus, and the fact that its McGee College in Londonderry will welcome its first graduate medical students next year. Good. The university has also witnessed the opening of a £5 million sports centre in the Coleraine campus, along with a £6.5 million media centre. The Times and Sunday Times guide will contain full profiles of all the UK universities and a league table made up of 9 indicators. I'm not a big fan of all this kind of, you know, football sort of league stuff. I think it's sort of, gives you the wrong idea about some of the universities. Some of them excel at some things and others, and some others don't. It's sort of, you know, 6 of 1, half a dozen the others. Some people do well at this area, and then that's a well in that, but another university does well at that, but not in this. So it's a contentious question, I think. what else we got here? All Northern Ireland paper, £5 and £10 notes to be withdrawn from circulation next week. Right, so probably the end of them. By Monday, September the 30th. There is just 1 week until all Northern Ireland paper, £5 and £10 notes are withdrawn from circulation. They will be replaced by a polymer notes from the Bank of Ireland, Deutsche Bank and Ulster Bank, which were introduced into circulation last February. That's kind of plastic type sort of notes. You know, it's not paper, it's just kind of notes. The Association of Commercial Banknote Issuers has encouraged the public to spend or exchange the paper notes ahead of the September deadline. A spokesperson said, thanks to the work of the Bank of Ireland, Deutsche Bank and Ulster Bank have already undertaken to swap the older notes with the more secure, environmentally friendly polymer notes. The majority of £5 and £10 notes have already been replaced with the polymer. We have a set deadline for using £5 and £10 notes as September the 30th. The Northern Ireland notes issuing banks will continue to accept old paper-based notes, and there are currently no plans to change this. Meanwhile, First Trust Bank confirmed in February that they will cease their own note insurance by June next year and will instead dispense Bank of England banknotes. First Trust banknotes remain legal currency until the 20th of June. So there's lots of changes going on over there by the look of it. The evolution of our cities is everyone's business. We have the same issues here in New Zealand. Should our cities grow up or out? The answer to this question is frequently debated. But their annual conference next month, the Urban Land Institute of Ireland, aims to make the case for density in our urban neighbourhoods. Now in its third year, the ULI Ireland annual conference promises to provide a forum for discourse centred around the theme of good density, drivers, dividends and debates. It takes place on next month in Dublin. With an array of national and international speakers on the agenda, the conference will provide an opportunity to learn from the international experience of city formation. A former head of the School of Surveying and Construction is now in charge at the Technical University of Dublin. Don was also privy chair of the Private Residential Tenancies Board. That's interesting. From 2004 to 2009. He explains that the conference will discuss the features and benefits of good density, what it is and what it is not. That's what we're having here, you know, to sort of, you know, go up or sort of go out, particularly in the larger metropolitan areas here, like Auckland as an example. The goal is to explore these issues against the backdrop of what has happened in our other major cities and ascertain whether Ireland can learn from successes and failures elsewhere. Contrary to popular belief, density is not necessarily synonymous with high rise. You can achieve a lot of what you're trying to achieve with reasonable densities, but you don't have to go very high. And although it is very useful in cities to go high, that's why it's useful to have this form of discussion around this, as many people don't really understand the definitions of density and high rise. Well, that's true, isn't it? You say it's going to be a high rise, people just they don't give you how many stories or whatever. There is intent to increase the density at which development will take place in the Dublin area, as well as Cork, Limerick, Galway. In urban areas in Ireland, there is a need to get density up. This will ultimately mean apartment living, and there will be consequences from that. The design of apartments will have to be improved. How they will be built and financed will have to be discussed and debated. Adding that, the conference will also explore the economic drivers for this. We want to investigate the economic drivers creating the conditions whereby you don't get the same level of home ownership in apartments as you would in private houses, which is fair enough. You'd still, be able to buy your apartment, I like to think. The conference will also attempt to illustrate the potential dividend from achieving optimum density. You are 5 minutes from a bottle of milk, a cafe or a pub, and maybe 10 minutes from a school. In other words, if you get urban areas organised with a good degree of density, you don't need cars. And public transport becomes more efficient, so there is a huge dividend for the wider community. That's fair enough. The issue of density has become especially pertinent against the backdrop of the current housing problems in Dublin and other Irish cities. Dunn says all cities need a wide range of accommodation types. A lot of them need just accommodation. You worry about the types later. In the spectrum of offerings across the city, cities will work better if there is a lot of choice of accommodation. The classic example is the IT executive coming here to work for 4 or 5 years. He probably wants good quality accommodation, but doesn't want to buy and would rather rent. There's a vast market for this, and then it needs to be provided. I was reading about that in Dublin. It's really, it's priced itself out of the market. It's up there with San Francisco. All these high-tech companies, Google, et cetera, Facebook, have moved their offices to Dublin, their headquarters, and they're bringing in all these people who are just pushing out all ordinary working people are just getting sort of, not exploited, but they're getting moved on because they just can't afford the exorbitant rents that are being charged in Dublin. It really is a big problem. And like I said, they compare it to San Francisco, which is the homeless centre of America. You mean there's more people homeless there than there's in any other city in the United States. Among the speakers is David Brown, current president of the Royal Institute of Architects in Ireland and managing partner at RKI, director at, I can't even say it, head of research at AIB. Among the international speakers is Nuala Gallagher, who is director of city growth, investment infrastructure in the city of Bristol. Gallagher hails from Donegal, is uniquely placed to put Ireland's objectives in an international context. She's had a very interesting career in the UK, so we'd be fully familiar with the issues you can come across when running a city and providing the infrastructure needed for density. This is the kind of build we are all talking about when it comes to making Dublin a livable city. You're talking about we'll provide a valuable perspective on student housing, social housing and apartment living. Well, if you want to have a city of, with any sort of diversity, it has to be affordable and livable and decent, to all people in all kind of income brackets. There are over 40,000 members in 75 countries of this institute, and they represent the entire spectrum of land use and property development disciplines across both the public and private sectors. It is a truly international organization that is dedicated to the best practice in real estate, but Dunn is keenly impressed that it is a multi-stakeholder endeavor. We always say it's always the same kind of rhetoric, isn't it? The best policy, best practice. It's kind of words at the end of the day. Anyway, that's all for this week. We're going to be playing more music because I'm running late and I have to be somewhere else. So until then, please take care and I'll see you next week and I will have a lot more news. Okay? Thank you very much and have a great weekend. Bye.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.